Today is Thursday. Hey, it is March 1st, 2018. It's 11:12 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record in the studios at WGN Radio. We hope you enjoy the Mincing Rascals. Do share this with your friend. Do comment on our page. And do listen to me weekdays from 1 to 3 in the afternoon and on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Tribune editorial board.
I'm Scott Stannis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and the co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the utterly exhausted columnist from the Tribune. I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
We've been saying that a lot lately.
I'm not exhausted. I'm just, the news has just been so relentless. There was a month's worth of news just yesterday out of Washington.
What was the big story for you?
Well, I mean, with what's going on with Trump tweeting at Jeff Sessions, with Hope Hicks resigning, with the Mueller probe clearly closing in on Trump, it's just really
We'll get to as many of those as we can. Do we know what the Hope Hicks lies are? She said, as communications director, she would sometimes have to tell white lies for the president, but she didn't say what they were. Has anybody said what specifically did she say that was not truthful about the president?
Nothing specific.
Other than maybe everything. I mean,
the Daily Mail is reporting that she did say, apparently Trump berated her because she's told the white lies to some investigators.
Don't we all tell some white lies? I really think
it depends. We admired your pocket square this morning instead of mocking you for it, just for instance. But no, she doesn't talk much.
Hope Hicks,
for communications director, she's kind of behind the scenes, so I don't know exactly what she's talking about. I like when someone on Twitter said, white lies matter.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Honestly, if you're a communications director for a politician, I don't even know if you should need to say white lies. You lie every single day. You lie to reporters, you twist, you spin. I mean, this happens to me every day as a reporter. Doesn't it happen to you where someone's kind of trying to spin something?
Well, spin is different than lying, though, isn't it?
Say it again.
Spin is different than lying.
Well, no, it's not lies. It's white lies. Seriously, I think Kristen's right. I don't think we should hang Hope Hicks on that because we all do that all the time. You'd hate to think that that's the way your government is communicating to you, but still, I need to know what the definition of white lies is before I get too exercised about this. And I'm not, Kristen. I'm not real worried about that. You know, I suppose it's more consequential that does anybody know how many White House communications directors we've had under President Trump?
Four?
I count six.
Six communications?
Okay, here's my list. Sean Spicer did it twice, so technically he gets to be two. Okay. Michael Dubkey was right. It for a short time. Scaramucci.
That's four slots.
Hope Hicks is five, and now somebody today is going to fill that role.
And you're not conflating press secretary with communications director.
I don't think maybe I am because for a period of time Spicer was both. Maybe that's where I'm getting the two in my head. Maybe it's just five.
The interesting number to me,
including whoever it is today,
I believe there are. I think the number has now hit 50 White House staffers who've left in the first year and change in the Trump administration. The turnover under this president has been phenomenal and extraordinary, which suggests this whole, you know, White House and chaos and turmoil, and you know, a lot of leaks coming out of that place saying that Trump is just, you know, flummoxed these days as to what's going on.
And yet, the bully is using the bully pulpit this week to stand up to the NRA.
You can't buy a handgun at 18, 19, or 20. You have to wait till you're 21. But you can buy the gun, the weapon used in this horrible shooting at 18. I can say that the NRA is opposed to it. It doesn't make sense that I have to wait till I'm 21 to get a handgun, but I can get this weapon at 18. I don't know.
We didn't address it, Mr. President. Look, I think
why? Because you're afraid of the NRA, right?
Well, that was the thing yesterday. It's just extraordinary.
And I think his numbers are going to tick up. Not that that matters. That's just a political consideration. More important is gun safety. But I think he's saying a lot of right things this week, Eric. Don't you?
No. What are you talking about? You're talking about when he says Well, I mean, there are a few things that I agree with. Yes, but when he says we need to get rid of due process and start. I mean, what the NRA and the conservatives have been yelling about for 8 years under Obama, the president is coming for your guns. It's finally come true, right? I mean, he says he wants to take away people's guns and then give them due process.
Take the firearms first and then go to court, because that's another system. Because a lot of times by the time you go to court, it takes so long to go to court to get the due process procedures. I like taking the guns early, like in this crazy man's case that just took place in Florida. to go to court would have taken a long time. So you could do exactly what you're saying, but take the guns first, go through due process second.
That was just extraordinary.
And he said that to the vice president with the TV cameras there.
Oh, that was just a stunning moment.
I was more taken with him taking on his own party in that in their bill, they didn't address the age issue, and he confronted them on their fear of the NRA. I mean, when have you ever seen a Republican president do that? He called him out. You know, you're afraid of the NRA. I have not seen a Republican president do that.
And
so
would not
I think
have.
He gets credit for that.
John McCain would not have said that.
He
the
does
last...
not get credit yet for that because he has done this with other issues, with
exactly.
DACA, with immigration,
exactly.
where he's come out and said things in some of these public settings, and you'll think like, oh my goodness, this is the pivot. This is when we're going to see the new Donald Trump, where he's taking on his own party, he's going his own way, and then Stephen Miller and those guys get him back in the room and go, no, Mr. President, that's not what you think after all. So I'm waiting even today on Thursday for there to be a clarifying remark. This is what the president actually meant.
And you can walk it back even further. To candidate Trump, to citizen Trump, when he has said things like this before, but as soon as it's time to make legislation, it all seems to be dictated by the neocons.
For instance, when he wrote his book, he was for a ban on assault weapons. During one of the debates, he said he's changed his mind, and now he's changed his mind again. So he can be very fluid about these sort of things. But I've never faulted candidates or human beings for fluidity of thought anyway. So, Eric, if he today says, I'm for a ban on assault-style weapons, there is no such thing as an assault weapon, but those weapons don't look like that. AR-15s, if I believe that he is against them today, and I'm happy about that.
Again, because tomorrow he may be back in favor of them. I mean, I agree with what you say about, fluidity, evolution of thought. I think that people are afraid to change their minds these days. And even when confronted with new evidence or new arguments, they're afraid to change their minds. I think it's fine to change your mind. I think when you're talking about flip-flopping, that tends to be like, well, like what you see with Trump, where he thinks one thing and then somebody gets his ear, he thinks something else. Somebody else gets his ear, he thinks something else. Where I'm not thinking, I don't feel like this is an intellectual or a philosophical evolution on his part. I just feel like it's the last person who talked to him.
Yeah, but I also think this is a guy who doesn't give a shit what other people think, particularly people who try and usurp his power, and everybody does seem to be afraid of the NRA, and so he is the guy to thumb his nose at it just to prove a point.
I think, at least in these meetings, he is trying to do what most Americans are trying to do, which is walk the middle. He also said the NRA is not the boogeyman here. So I think people agree with that, too. He is trying to pick a few proposals of all of that soup that's on the table and walk the middle a little bit. People under 21, maybe we shouldn't be selling them assault-style weapons. Maybe we need more background checks. Maybe we need to revive the bump stock issue.
You talked about the bump stock issue that Senator Feinstein, I know, cares passionately about. And I'm going to write that out.
But let's
because
get
we
started.
Can do that with an executive order. I'm going to write the bump stock, essentially write it out. So you won't have to worry about bump stock. Shortly, that'll be gone.
I think he's trying to find middle ground, and I don't see how that's something you can criticize him for.
No, I agree with Kristen there. I think that you can't criticize him for it if he holds to it. I'm not going to get too optimistic about this because I feel like later today, tomorrow, over the weekend, and I think Kristen's exactly right, which is that this is where most Americans are. The positions that she's just articulated and that the president articulated yesterday, this is where most Americans are. So, you give him credit for trying to find that, but can he now ride the horse into battle?
Well, I would also argue, if I can throw in another issue here, and that is that as scary and looming and dark as assault-type weapons are, they account for so few of the attacks and so few of the gun deaths in this country. So there's 50-plus thousand more deaths attributable to handguns than to these types of weapons. So we're having this discussion, but it just seems frivolous.
No, I agree with you, Scott. It always comes down to what's in the person's hand. What can we do to remove when, in fact, in the Florida shooting case, the government fell down at every single turn in order to keep the weapons out of this person's hand who obtained them illegally. Now, he was a teenager, so you're seeing movement in the state legislature this week of talk of banning assault sales to people under 21. And maybe at the state level, we'll see movement if we won't at the federal level.
I just want to bring one other thing up, and then we'll leave this subject because we could spend the rest of the podcast talking about due process. And the idea that we would give you due process after we take away your constitutionally held gun is sort of the antithesis of due process. Mike, I'm all for due process after we take away their gun, no, then we'll give them
the
due process.
This is a guy who has shown absolutely no respect for due process. This is the same guy who stood in front of the police officers and said that we should rough up suspects.
Yeah.
There's a good piece in Vox which talks about just what Scott was saying, which is that assault-style weapons really aren't the problem when you're talking about the kind of violence that's committed, especially by teenagers, and that really what's needed to keep guns out of the hands of 18 to 21-year-olds. There's a ban on them buying handguns, but you need to tighten those restrictions to cover things like internet sales, gun show sales, because that's a much, much bigger problem statistically in terms of the carnage that it causes.
How about here in Cook County, how about enforcing the laws for a change?
Are any of you going to change your shopping habits? Are you going to go to Dick's, for instance, as the mayor is, to buy running shoes now? Or are you going to not use Eric, Federal Express, for shipping because they said, as you pointed out in your column this week, that they are still going to offer a discount to NRA members? Are you aligning your purchases with those beliefs?
I might do it a little bit, but probably not, because some of the other companies that are being targeted include Apple and Amazon, which are companies that I use all the time. And you know, part of that column had to do with the fact that these consumer boycotts very rarely actually change consumer buying habits in any significant degree. That the effect of the boycott, and there's an excellent professor over at Northwestern's Kellogg School who has studied like hundreds of them, the effect of the boycott basically comes in the publicity surrounding it. The companies are worried about their reputations as much as they are, you know, in the immediate future on their bottom line, and because they know that, yeah, I mean, some of us are going to stop, you know, they'll go to UPS instead of FedEx or whatever, but not that many for not.
I think
long.
The bigger issue is that these companies should be applauded for doing it without government telling them to do it. They are voluntarily choosing because of public pressure, whatever, or personal responsibility, corporate responsibility. I just read Dick's is no longer going to sell AR-15s. They're going to not sell weapons to people under 21. Great. Free market. They can choose to do that. That is not government swooping in and tying their hands. And I think they should be applauded for that.
Speaking of government swooping in and tying hands, there's a state social worker here in Illinois named Mark Janis. He said he loves his work, but he hates his union. He does not want to pay even the slightly discounted participation dues that he has to pay. He said, why is it that to do my job, I have to each week have money taken out of my paycheck for my union dues? It's a union that I don't support. It's before the U.S. Supreme Court. And last time something like this came up, it was 4-4. That was before Neil Gorsuch. So, Kristen, you go first. So whose side are you on this one?
Janis, all the way.
I knew you were going to say that.
I requiring public workers to join a union, which is a political organization. They are trying to make this case that they are not, and that is just ridiculous, I think is a violation of his First Amendment rights. And so he should be able to get out of the fair share the fair share fees, too. He doesn't agree with what the union does. In a lot of cases, I think our union in particular, AFSCME, is over the top. They won't work. They're asking for they work 37.5 hours, and they automatically start getting overtime. They protect bad workers. They create more inefficiency in government. And if you don't want to support that union, you shouldn't have to. And that's really, to me, what this case is about.
Right to work has been an issue in this country since I started cartooning back in the Carter administration. And frankly, I agree with it. I think being forced to join a group is just as heinous as not being able to join a group. Voluntary cooperation to have that group be able to negotiate as a whole, that's their power as workers. I would join if I thought it was right, but I would also like the ability not to join.
You're AFSCME's last hope here, Eric. Are you with them?
Well, let me say a few things. First of all, I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind who studies this at all that Janis is going to win this case at the Supreme Court. It was 4-4, and Neil Gorsuch is the new justice, very conservative. So the Janis case, Janis is going to win his case. There's also no question that it's going to hurt the public sector unions. I consider right to work laws to be right to freeload laws, because the law also requires that someone in Janis's case who doesn't want to be part of the union, doesn't want to pay union dues, the law requires the union to continue to represent him in grievance procedures and in other things. And he continues to get the raises that the union wins in its negotiations. So he's going to be able to benefit from the actions of the union when he doesn't contribute in any way to the union's policy. Now, there's an old Supreme Court decision which is called Abood. It has to do with it was a similar public sector case, and that one allowed public sector, I'm sure it's public sector or all union employees to withhold the portion of their dues that go toward political activities, that go toward endorsing or sponsoring candidates. The argument that Janice makes and that Kristen makes, and I think is defensible, which is that everything that a public sector union does is essentially a political act. Is that a fair way to summarize?
I mean, I wouldn't say everything, but in terms of election outcomes and where they put their resources, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so that when you talk about when the union is negotiating for, say, a raise for or pension benefits, whatever, that since that money is taxpayer money, it's not a private business money. It is fundamentally a political issue, and that was the thrust of the argument in front of the Supreme Court that I think at least five justices, or probably only five, are going to buy. I think the question now really is not who's right and wrong, because the Supreme Court's going to say that Janice is right, but what's the effect going to be on groups like Ask Me? And they're going to lose power.
They're going to lose membership. They're going to lose revenue.
They're going to
have to work harder to keep their members.
Which
nothing
is what the
co-counsel precludes
said.
Them
yeah.
from doing a better job of proving to people why they should be in membership. I also just want to touch on something Eric raised. In terms of the laws currently forcing labor unions to represent those workers who are under fair share, I think you will see those laws change. I think people like Mark Janice would actually prefer to be out from beneath the negotiations, and he would like to get pay raises based on merit. And so I don't think that you will see a continuation of those types of laws. These people who break free of the union will be on their own, basically, in terms of pay raises and health care benefits.
And that could ultimately redound to the benefit of the union. If someone says, you know, look, I want the job protection that union representation and arbitration and so on provides. That seems like, you know, if the union is saying, like, there is a value proposition here, they're going to have to work harder to sell themselves to their prospective members, and
yeah.
you know, it's going to cost some political power, and there's no question about that. So that's why I think this is a big deal. It's a big decision.
Are you all a member of union?
No.
Are you, Scott?
No, not at the moment.
Yeah.
I used to be vice president of my union at a previous.
Is that
so
right?
I was too.
She was standing
Kristen.
On tables holding the sign.
I distinguish very much between private employee unions and public employee unions. And I was working for a private employer, a newspaper, and sat down and negotiated our upcoming contract. I have no problem with that.
Wait, was that here in Illinois?
Yeah, it was in Illinois.
Because I was in a right-to-work state in Tennessee, and I joined the union because I wanted the protections that the union had for my job.
Right. Well, so I'm not a union member now, but I sure have been. And the benefits were so much better with my union than not. And
so then why are they so afraid of this decision if they're so great?
Because right. if 100 people are going to advocate for better insurance benefits and I get to participate in those insurance benefits, but I don't have to pay for them, then I think a lot of people will freeload off what the union is going to do. Now, maybe it'll be two scale, right? If you're in the union, you get the benefits that they negotiate. But they don't extend to the people that are on their own.
Yeah.
And if
right,
that
they
happens,
no longer have to pay fair share, so they won't be part of the union.
And so do you think that person who's the outlier then, will the employer give him more of a raise? Will the employer extend to him better benefits? Or will the employer not? Who do you think will win in that scenario?
The clever employer would give the non-union employee the same benefits.
Or even better
in order to try to break the union.
That's what I think will happen. I mean,
they're going to do whatever is cheaper. And if state government is an example right now, if you are in management in a lot of these agencies, you are not part of the union, and they actually have not gotten the raises. They don't get the cheap health care. Look at CPS. If you are not part of the Chicago Teachers Union, you are getting your payments ramped up of what you owe into your pension funds, the teachers are still only paying in 2%. So I think the employer is always going to do what's cheaper, and I don't know that would necessarily be the case.
Let's talk a little bit about Barack Obama's, it's not a library, right? It's a center that's going to open
what
up on the
calling
south
it?
Side.
Presidential center, is it?
I think they're calling it presidential
Obama
center
presidential
as opposed
center?
To library.
Okay.
If it's
and
a
golf course.
There's rules about what a library is or isn't and endowments, and it gets a little complicated. Your colleague Blair Kamen explained it to me the other day, but that campus that would open up just south of the Science and Industry Museum over by the University of Chicago has been a difficult sell to that part of the city. Somebody tell me why it is so difficult for Barack Obama's people to drop $250 million on the South Side.
This is an area that I drive this way almost, I don't know, two or three times a week. This is a public park. They are talking about completely reconfiguring roadways that Southsiders use. And I think there's a lot of suspicion and skepticism about how much economic development this will really bring. And so they want to get a lot of things in writing. And I think they're protective of what is now a beautiful public park. They're talking about plopping down a structure that is how tall?
230 feet.
Yeah. It aesthetically kind of looks
almost a football field. It's an obelisk. Bad-looking building.
I'm not crazy about, by the way.
Well, exactly. So why would you assume that Southsiders would be any different than the people in Wilmette or Northside? Who also would not want a big, ugly structure plopped down in the middle of a park.
But isn't a great deal of the objection to this the fear that this will bring gentrification to this area and it'll drive people out of their homes?
Eventually.
I think that's one of many prongs, but I think the bigger issue is they want this community agreement, and we've editorialized it. In some cases, they were asking for way too much. But I think they want assurances that there's going to be minority contractors working on the project, that their lifestyle, their quality of life is not going to be terribly disrupted. And I think those are reasonable asks.
And also, one of the roads they're talking about initially when they premiered this idea, they actually shut down a fairly major artery there, right?
I can't remember six lanes. Name. Yeah.
Yeah, and just through the park.
And it was just sort of like this whole, and this is where Kristen is absolutely correct. It was this very arbitrary, like, well, you know, this is for Obama. It's like, yeah, but I can't get to work. Yeah, but it's Obama.
Not many people are dropping hundreds of millions of dollars over there. So Barack Obama said this will not be a gentrification issue. Not in this generation, because there's not a lot to gentrify there. It might be for Malia's kids. How much other investment is in there? I mean, it's a park.
A lot right now. No,
really.
I mean, this part of Stony Island is a bustling business district. These are middle and upper middle class families who live in this area. This is not, you know, some dumping ground. It is right now probably one of the most stable and thriving business areas of Chicago. So I don't think they want to forego the project, but they want to be heard. And I think President Obama is getting frustrated that they haven't just welcomed him with open arms. But look at what we did to the Lucas Museum. Yeah. We sent them away.
Yeah, we did. You know, yeah, we
for
did.
A lot of the same reasons.
Yeah, but
we
they
don't
weren't
like the way it looks. You're taking public property. We're not just going to give away what is rightfully ours.
And the Lucas was non-tax dollars, too. That was privately funded. And that was going to be $1 billion or some damn
thing. But it was on lakefront property that the park district was going to give to George Lucas for $1.
You know, the problem with the Lucas thing is I don't think they ever explained to us exactly what that was going to be.
Narrative art. What's not to understand?
I thought it was going to be Star Wars stuff, and they go, no, it's not. It's not going to be Star
be
Wars stuff.
Sales.
It's going to be narrative art, and I still don't know what that is.
I'm also skeptical of these presidential centers in this online age. What is it that you're going to go there and see exactly? It's unclear to me what the draw is, but I'll take their word for it that people are going to flock to it.
Speaking of the battle between the South and the North Side, I just want to share with you guys in this podcast, and then we'll wrap it up, my newfound allegiance for the Chicago White Sox. The Chicago White Sox are now broadcast on WGN Radio. The Sox and the Cubs played their first exhibition game, and we broadcast that on this radio station this week. And I found myself for the first time listening attentively to and rooting for the White Sox.
Carpetbagger.
Totally. I am a total carpetbagger.
Do you have any tattoos? Sorry. You're not allowed to be a White Sox fan.
You get to make that joke because you're a White Sox fan wearing a White Sox hat. I mean, you'll take us, won't you, us newfound White Sox fans?
I don't know. If you're going to wear that handkerchief thing.
I do have a purple pocket square in my black blazer.
You have a purple pocket square in your blazer, so you are disqualified. I'm sorry.
The bouncers at what is it, Guaranteed Rate Field will kick you right out.
I think it's great that this big radio station is now going to pay attention to the South Side baseball team and the South Side. Really, we have forsaken over the years everything that is not North Side, Northwest Side, suburbs. That's been the sweet spot for way too much of Chicago, and that we're going to focus our 50,000-watt blowtorch on a whole part of the community we've neglected over the years. I think it's great. And I have a personal vested interest because if the White Sox do well, my radio station and I prosper. So I'll own that.
Go Sox.
Yeah, Scott is wearing a White Sox hat.
What is his excuse?
You guys are interlopers.
Why are you wearing a White Sox hat?
Now it's like cool and in vogue or something. So
this was given to me by a White Sox fan. As I've only lived in the city for 9 years, and so I had this discussion with many people. It strikes me as odd, coming from Alabama, where the discussion is Alabama or Auburn, and it's blood sport down there. They kill trees over this.
Literally.
So I come up here, and I'm just saying, you can't, if they're not playing each other, I can root for both teams.
Oh, Scott.
I know. It's blasphemy. I know. But someone has to take a stand and say we can get along.
Kristen, you're with me on this, aren't you? You cannot.
She just said hi, Scott, with her hand. Okay.
Kristen, you can't. You're right. You can't root for both, right?
No, we even wrote an editorial during that time. I didn't write it, of course, but talking about all the successful teams and forgot to mention the 2005 World Series championship White Sox.
She gave us
in an editorial like a year and a half ago.
She gave us her resting
so
Sox face.
It is yes, I have a resting Sox. There is credible data to back up why we feel excluded all the time.
Here are our recommendations. Scott, you go first. What are you liking this week?
I actually did a digital first and only video talking about guns in our schools. I tagged it to a driver's ed teacher I had who was certifiably cray-cray. And so I did a little video and a little animation. So if you want to go see it, go to chicagotribune.com/Stantis.
It expresses your view on the topic, huh?
It talks about how that's not a great idea.
I would second that. And Scott's videos are great because you get to watch the process of the drawing. It's very cool to watch.
Thanks.
Mine is an article in New York Times Magazine called "The Case Against Google" by Charles Duhigg, and he talks about Google is something that we all love and use all the time, but he makes a case that, I'm quoting him here, it's threatening everything from our economy to democracy itself. That Google has become this incredible behemoth, and he puts it in the context of the some of the other monopolies that have been broken up over the years, and talks about why they are a threat to competitors, why they are a threat to the dissemination of news and so on. So it's a really interesting read in New York Times Magazine, and Elif will link to that.
Well, I still use my Alta Vista.
I still use Ask Jeeves.
Oh, man.
I started reading a book. I'll keep it really short. I don't think it officially comes out until June, but have you guys ever had a good friend write a book?
Yeah.
Okay, I really haven't. So this is one of my friends from graduate school. He is he's an anchor on, I think, NBC, on the NBC affiliate in Nashville. And he wrote a fiction novel that is fantastic, and it's about outer space and a child's disappearance. And he bases it on his experience as a reporter interviewing families over the years who, where a child went missing, and his mother, who had kind of a role in the federal government, kind of touching on this topic. So anyway, it's called The Darkest Time of Nights by Jeremy Finley, and it's excellent. Spring break is coming up. Summer is coming up. This is a great beach read, so look it up.
Did you do the blurb for it?
No, I didn't. He sent me an early copy and said, give me your feedback, and it is a page-turner. It's really excellent.
Oh, good to hear. I've been asked to blurb a couple of times. That is the hardest thing in the world to do. I could get you a page, I could get you a paragraph, but two sentences or one and a half sentences, I can't do.
Studs Terkel is a master of this. I think he had a series of just like boilerplate blurbs because people were always asking him to blurb books, and so you'd read them. You go look at the back of some of these books about 20 years ago, and Studs Terkel blurbs them all, and he uses very similar phrases. So that's what you need to do, John. Just
I didn't steal.
Blurb-o-matic.
I found the right blurb. I'm recommending The White Darkness, A Journey Across Antarctica. It's an article that appeared 2 weeks ago or 2 issues ago in The New Yorker. It's about a guy who wanted to walk across the South Pole, not just sort of redo Shackleton's endurance visit, but to walk from where you would dock to the South Pole and then walk to the other side of the South Pole, walk all the way across Antarctica. And it was about his epic effort to do it. It's a very long article. It reads like a book. They'll probably expand it and make it one. And it's been a pet subject of mine, Antarctica and those expeditions. And this is a story that I hadn't heard until just now. It didn't happen that long ago, but it's called The White Darkness, A Journey Across Antarctica in the February 12th issue of The New Yorker. And that wraps up this week's edition of The Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Kristen McQuarrie, wearing a White Sox hat.
Thanks for having me.
And Scott Stantis, wearing a White Sox hat.
Thanks for having me.
And you Eric need one, Zornot. I guess.
Wearing a Cubs hat in spirit.
Yes, and I'm wearing a pocket square and a White Sox hat in spirit. Ben Cortez is our engineer. Elif Garris is our producer. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.